Your Excellency, generals, admirals, members, guests, a hearty welcome to all of you to this Christmas members' meeting, our final meeting this term. Our program for the spring term is on its way to your mailbox on page 51 in the next issue of Norsk Militær Tidsskrift and our webpage. The webpage is always updated. Changes should be expected. Remember that. Today, we have the honor of having Mr. Ihor Holoshevsko, Ukraine's Chargé d'Affaires ad interim, as our guest speaker. Norway fully supports the brave people of Ukraine in your fight against Russia's aggression. Like Ukraine, Norway is also one of Russia's neighbors. President Putin has told the whole world who and what he is through his brutal and aggressive attack on a peaceful neighbor and through the brutality of the Russian troops in Ukraine. The mere possibility that Russia may win is unbearable to the civilized world, so Ukraine needs more help, quick, in their struggle to defeat and to fight back the Russian aggressors. Mr. Holoshevsko, we are eager to hear your views on these matters and on the ongoing war in general. The audience is yours.
Good evening, everyone. I hope you can clearly hear me, my sound. My name is indeed Ihor Holoshevsko, Chargé d'Affaires ad interim, if you translate it in a form of diplomatic language into a normal one, basically means acting ambassador. I am deputy ambassador who acts as a head of the mission until a full-fledged ambassador will arrive. I do not know yet when it happens, so as of now, I'm doing my job here with you today. I am basically a newcomer to Oslo. I arrived only on the 1st of September, so 3 months ago. This is my third diplomatic posting abroad. The first two were to Romania, and the second to Austria, to the OSCE, Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. This is the first post here in Norway in which I'm the head of the embassy. The reason why I agreed to come today and to deliver my short introductory statement to you, and I will be ready to open whatever questions you might have afterwards, is that I have been dealing with the issue of Russia's aggression against my country in different capacities as a diplomat for the past 10 years, so in fact since it began in 2014. I worked in the MFA and the Office of the President, then dealt with Russia's aggression as a political counselor to the OSCE. And between my previous post and my current one here in Norway, I was deputy political director in the MFA. I will start with short introduction, so I'm not aware of how much you know about Ukraine, Russia, and relations between our countries, some historic background. So I will deliver just short several remarks for better maybe political understanding of the war and its roots. To start with, I would present one example from my previous capacity in the OSCE. One of the issues we have been pushing forward within this organization was the correct titles, correct names, correct wording. If you know, so Russian language and Ukrainian languages both belong to the Slavic languages, family of languages, but they are quite different. The difference, the gap between them is quite big. It is nearly like between Norwegian and Dutch. For instance, I do not speak Norwegian, although I have started doing that. But if I take a written text in Norwegian by speaking English and German, I can basically understand what it is about. But it doesn't mean I do speak Norwegian. So in Russian, they say, when they refer to my country, they say on Ukraine. While in Ukrainian, we say it in Ukraine. Why do they do that? Because Russians do not recognize Ukraine as a sovereign state. In Russian language, na on is used for geographical areas, for on Caucasus, for instance, not for some state. In the OSCE, the translators, which were mainly people from Russia because that was their first language, used in Ukraine since 1990s till 2013. Since the end of 2013, in 2014, they switched back using to on Ukraine. And one of the biggest diplomatic battles I had in Vienna was to persuade that we should use the reference to in Ukraine to a sovereign state. This is for you to understand how they see, how Kremlin sees Ukraine. They do not recognize us as a separate identity, separate nation. They do really see us as a part of this big Russian world, Russian people, how they call it. Although we are very different people. The problem is not only with the language. So we are very different in our heads, in our style of thinking. When I was a kid, my grandfather moved for several years in 1980s to Siberia to work because they simply had bigger salaries at that time for people who were ready to go there. I remember he was telling me that he was always been able to, he was always able to identify whether a specific house in Siberia belonged to Ukrainian family or to a Russian one. If it was well furnished, painted with some green around it, it belonged to Ukrainian family. If it was totally neglected, it was a Russian house. Again, one of examples for you to understand that we are now fighting not only for our territorial integrity, for our internationally recognized borders, we fight for our way of living. We do not want to be a part of Russian Empire anymore. We do not want to live Russian-like style anymore. That is one of the our biggest causes why we are so fierce in our resistance to this full-scale invasion and why we have been doing that since the very regaining of independence in 1991.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I might also refer that neither 2014 nor even 2022 were the first cases when Russia tried to undermine Ukraine's sovereignty. You can, some of you might have heard about the Tuzla crisis, this peninsula extension close to Crimea. You might have heard about problems with the Black Sea Fleet until we signed a bilateral agreement in 1997, dividing it into two parts, Ukrainian one and the Russian one. So the biggest problem for Russia was that they refused to recognize reality. They refused to recognize that Russia and Ukraine are two separate entities, and we do not want to be a part of them. What else? So Ukraine is quite big country in the terms of size. One of the propaganda myths Russians have been used for decades was that speaking Russian language and being Russian and thinking Russian is the same. This is not true. Yes, Ukraine is a bilingual state, but only because all of us speak both Ukrainian and Russian. That is, so in fact, my mother language is Russian because I was born in Kharkiv, second biggest city in Ukraine, very close to the border with Russia. I was a kid when the Soviet Union collapsed, and Kharkiv at that time was predominantly Russian-speaking city because it was how the metropolis from Moscow has been doing with its colonies, I would say, Ukraine and other Soviet republics, the Russian language has been introduced as what all empires throughout the history have been doing, imposing their language, their laws, their way of thinking. So in Ukraine, another propaganda which was widely used by Russia and still being used now during the full-scale invasion is that they protect the interests of the so-called Russian people. Let me be clear on that. None of the regions of Ukraine, with the exception of Crimea, has a majority of Russian population. The only two regions which had one-third of Russian ethnic origin were Donetsk and Luhansk, those two regions attacked by Russia in 2014. Crimea had, yes, had majority of population, like 57% of Russians. So it was easier, also in military terms, for Russia to occupy the peninsula because they really did have some level of support in it. It is, of course, not correlating, so it doesn't mean that 57% of population were waiting for them, but it means that it was easier for them. If you had a map here, so I could even show you how these geographical differences affected the course of the war in 2014 and while they keep doing that. For instance, the Luhansk region, one of those two eastern regions, in 2014, the Russians were able to occupy only the southern part of it, which had two reasons. The first one was geographical. There is a river, Siversky Donetsk, crossing the Luhansk region by half. Rivers, as you definitely know better than me, a career diplomat, are a very good obstacle when you have a war. It is easy to protect and it is hard to cross. But the second reason was that the north of Luhansk region does not have big cities. So Luhansk, as the capital of this region, is in the southern part. It has industrial suburbs, big towns with big population, while the northern part is simply a bunch of villages, which are very hard to occupy. We had examples when like a train with Russian mercenaries arrived in the beginning of 2014 to several villages. And then there were only few of them, like 10 people with guns. But then when they came to a village, in village almost each yard has a man with a gun because it's rural, it's countryside. And they were simply being repelled by guns from a village. While for big cities, the story was different. If you come to a city like Oslo, which has population nearly 1 million, you simply need to occupy a water pumping station, an electricity power station, police station, a military camp if it has it, and administration like city hall. That's all. If you control water, electricity, and also logistics and food in a big city, then you have a loyal population who simply do not have other options as to follow the instructions given by men with guns, because otherwise they would simply die from hunger or from lack of water, which is not the case for countryside. Okay, so as I said, I've been dealing with this for 10 years, so I can talk for hours covering food, energy, nuclear power, military aspects, political dimension of the war for me as a diplomat within the multilateral formats, UN resolutions, whatever. So that's why I thought that I would like to give you a floor to the questions you might have. It might be easier for me to focus on something specific than to just for talk, as I said, for hours without the knowledge whether it is interesting for you or not. So I would kindly ask you to start the Q&A session.